The Wake Up Call with Richard Martin, Mondays and Fridays at 10 a.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. Please be advised that the opinions and views expressed by Richard Martin of GF Investment Services, LLC, are entirely his own and do not necessarily represent the views of the company, its affiliates, or its officers. Investments based off of Richard Martin's comments are unsolicited by the company and are at the sole risk and prejudice of the listener and the investor.
Good morning, everybody. This is Richard Martin from The Wake Up Call, and it is coming to you today, as always, from Singapore, and it is the 14th of March. Well, notwithstanding the problems in Japan, the economic distress worsens for the average American every day. The recovery propaganda circulated by the power elite through the mass media is nothing but a fraud. Only those with wealth and power have recovered. The middle class is sinking further into poverty and despair. Unemployment remains at depression levels, and the entire economic faux recovery rests with Ben Bernanke's printing press. The United States is experiencing a deflationary collapse. Bernanke and his minions at the Federal Reserve will choose inflation as their poison because it will allow their banker masters to pillage the remaining wealth of the middle class before the final collapse. Social distress has manifested itself over the last year in Arizona as the illegal immigration issue has turned violent, with state government and federal government in conflict. The social welfare net is being strained through the payment of billions in unemployment compensation, food stamps, and other welfare programs. When this net breaks, all hell will break loose in the decaying urban meccas. Political distress is at historic levels as the Tea Party battles liberals and its own neocon Republican establishment. States are refusing to implement the federally mandated Obamacare. Governors are battling teachers' unions, firemen unions, and police unions in an effort to regain control of their out-of-control budgets. Military distress is already extreme even before a major conflict is thrust upon the country. The two wars of choice in the Middle East have drained trillions from the treasury of a declining empire. The all-volunteer military has been stretched to the breaking point. The multi-billion dollar high-tech weaponry has proven useless against so-called terrorists, who fade into mountains until they can strike again. As revolution erupts across the Middle East, the U.S. is helpless and has no credibility, as they have propped up the thugs and dictators who are slaughtering their people. The daily intensification of volcanic eruptions across the globe is clearly evident to all but the most linear thinkers. The election of Barack Obama in 2008 did not usher in a sweeping political realignment of the country. The actions he has taken in the last 2 years have maintained the status quo. The financial industry complex, the military industrial complex, and big pharma complex are stronger and more powerful today than they were in 2008. The 2010 midterm elections were a decisive rejection of Obama's policies. I expect a violent downturn in the economic fortunes of the United States, spurred by a continued fall in real estate values, generating more debt losses for the financial industry. as foreign creditors balk at lending more money to an already insolvent empire that is incapable of taking corrective budgetary actions. Right now, it doesn't seem possible that a communal cause could rejuvenate the spirit of America. An imminent threat, such as the Axis powers during World War II, the North and South seeing each other as a threat during the Civil War, or the threat from a foreign empire during the American Revolution, does not appear evident today. The war on terror is a concept rather than a real war. The absence of a known foreign adversary makes me think that the conflict could center within the country between Americans. The wealth distribution of the country is more heavily skewed to the haves versus the have-nots than at any time in history. The austerity measures that are being proposed on the backs of the middle class and senior citizens, while ultra-rich bankers have been bailed out and allowed to continue the pillaging of the countryside, will surely lead to class conflict. Generational warfare between the boomers who want what they are owed and the younger generation stuck with the bill will flare up in the coming years. The country has become so ideological that it can be easily split into the red states and the blue states. Could this ideological divide result in the country splitting into two or three independent countries? Would the federal government use the armed forces to maintain one country? It has happened before. The war on terror concept has been in place for the last 10 years and has resulted in draining the treasury of trillions, exhausting the country's limited volunteer forces, and created more terrorists than existed on September the 10th, 2001. The revolutions sweeping across northern Africa and the Middle East are not cause for celebration in Washington, D.C. American foreign policy has centered on supporting thugs, despots, and dictators across this region with financial aid and weapons. The aid was absconded and sent to bank vaults in Switzerland. The weapons are being used to kill the poor revolutionaries across the region. Two American-backed dictators have been deposed thus far, with Yemen likely to follow. America's allies in the region are falling with lightning speed. The loss of Saudi Arabia would portend dire consequences for the U.S. If the Middle East oil spigot is turned off, the American way of life will wither and die. The myth of American exceptionalism will not protect the country from the revolutionary tsunami that is sweeping the globe. America was not chosen by God as the country that would lead the world for eternity. The hubris and overreach of the American empire has bankrupted the nation. Greed, corruption, and arrogance are not limited to North African dictatorships. Crony capitalism supporting a vast military empire financed by a banker-controlled Federal Reserve has failed. Its failure will become clear as the trend intensifies and sweeps away the old order. Who or what replaces the old order is unknown at this point. Much will depend on the generations and their response to the crisis. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is Richard Martin. It is the wake-up call, and here is the toll-free number for your use. As follows, 888-874-4888. Once more, please call this number if you would like to join in the festivities here on the wake-up call. It is 888-874-4888. And if you would like to send in an email, you can do that too. The email, of course, is open, as always, at all times during the show. I will be able to pick up your email and we will be able to discuss it if you will write it in. The email address is rm@gfawd.com. That's RM for Richard Martin at GFAWD for Global Financial Advisory Wealth Design dot com. Once more, rm@gfawd.com. Finally, the phone number to call me direct if you would like to discuss your personal affairs out of the limelight, you may do that by calling a number in Sarasota, Florida, which is 941 area code 441-1682. Again, the number is 941-441-1682. Okay, well, the national debt, which stood at only $5.7 trillion around the turn of the century, or $55,000 per taxpayer, is now on track to surpass $22 trillion, which is $186,000 per taxpayer, and that's by 2015. State debt has risen from $750 billion to $1.16 trillion since 2000. And it's worth mentioning those numbers do not include any underfunded liabilities, which, although brushed aside in the past, become ever more important with every retiring worker. And this year, 44 states are expected to register budget shortfalls. The total budget gap for fiscal year 2012 comes in around $125 billion. And California owns the lion's share with $25.4 billion to fill, more than seven times Wisconsin's shortfall. Illinois comes in next with a $15 billion shortfall by Texas, $13.4 billion. New Jersey at $10.5 billion and New York at $9 billion. Ladies and gentlemen, the states are broke. Well, let me just take a quick email from Bill Adamo, that's been around a little while, so I thought I would deal with it quickly. Richard, I remember at least a year or two ago, Gary saying, wait until the price of land falls in the next 2 or 3 years. Do you agree? The prices I've seen here in upstate New York have been about the same the past couple of years. I want to get some farmstead or homestead land if I can get it at a good price. What do you think? Keep waiting or buy now before it goes up. Bill, I think there is every reason to suppose that all kinds of real estate, whether residential or commercial, are going to fall quite dramatically over the next couple of years. You need be in absolutely no hurry at all. I would wait, and I think that the price of raw materials, commodities of one sort or another, including all agricultural commodities, is going to collapse, and I think that you will therefore find much less interest in a year and a half, 2 years' time in farmland than may be the case today. So whatever you do, don't panic into anything. You don't need to do that. All right. Well, Bank of America Corp., the biggest U.S. lender by assets, is segregating almost half its 13.9 million mortgages into a so-called bad bank, comprised of its riskiest and worst-performing legacy loans. The legacy portfolio will hold 6.7 million loans with outstanding principal balance of about $1 trillion, according to a presentation to investors the other day. The portfolio will include loans that are currently 60 or more days delinquent, as well as riskier types of loans the bank no longer originates, such as subprime, Alt-A, interest-only, and option-adjustable rate mortgages. Of the 13.9 million loans Bank of America services, about 3.5 million are held by the company on its balance sheet. The rest are owned by other investors. According to Paul Miller, a former examiner with the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia and analyst at FBR Capital Management's in Arlington, Virginia. It's a way to get investors focus on the good. It's a way to talk about good things and ignore the bad. Yeah, that's a classic, all right. A classic example of an illegal con job traditionally called the shell game. In the shell game, you move your assets into a new company and then offload your trash onto other hapless investors, like your retirement fund, or you then simply bankrupt the so-called bad company, leaving original investors in the mud. In this case, Bank of America is not actually forming a new company. They are separating their assets using accounting tools. Who exactly is going to sign off on this new accounting? I don't know, but jail time seems appropriate. The scam, of course, is that they are trying to look more attractive so that they can scam new investors into their company. Also, by simply sidelining their $1 trillion in bad loans, their mistake, but not really a mistake when you can get away with illegal activity, they are then able to set about doing it all over again without using their so-called good investments to pay off their creditors. The truth, ladies and gentlemen, as I've said so many times about all these financial service companies, the truth is that Bank of America is bankrupt. And they absolutely should be forced to resolve their insolvency in front of a bankruptcy judge. After all, that's only the rule of law that's being ignored and usurped. And in case those of you are trying to make comparisons with the savings and loan crisis, this is not like a resolution trust. It is being done by a private corporation in order to benefit them. And it screws prior investors with no resolution whatsoever. This was also already done with Citibank, prolonging their life while regulators and law enforcement officials look the other way. What would I do with the banks? I would force every single bank in the country through a special bankruptcy, starting with the smallest banks and working my way up the chain. Any debts that are unserviceable would be defaulted, and it would be the banks that took the hit. Of course, this would devastate derivatives, appropriately so. Most should be illegal and would be charged. Okay, well, in a recent Bloomberg national poll, only one American in seven has faith that a lasting economic recovery has taken hold, and a plurality say they are personally worse off than they were 2 years ago. Almost half of the respondents in a Bloomberg national poll conducted between March the 4th and March the 7th believe the U.S. is in a fragile rebound and could fall back into recession. More than a third of the country believes the U.S. never emerged from recession. 63% of Americans say the nation is on the wrong track, compared with 66% who said so in December, which was the lowest in the national mood in the 1.5 years the Bloomberg poll has been conducted. The gloomy outlook contradicts economic data showing an economy on the mend, including 6 quarters of economic growth, a 95% rise in the Standard & Poor's 500 index over the past 2 years, and job growth last month of 192,000. The National Bureau of Economic Research officially dated the end of the recession to June 2009. Almost half of poll respondents say they are personally worse off than they were 2 years ago when the country was losing 796,000 jobs a month and the economy was shrinking at a 4.9% annual rate. The stock market hit its post-financial crisis low 2 years ago yesterday. Well, isn't that just fun? Well, the market collapse commenced in 2007 and gained momentum in 2008 maximizing its velocity and strength in the first quarter of 2009. This collapse was not the result of the indicators we hear bandied about so often in the mainstream media. It was not born from stagnating GDP, slow retail sales, lots of snow, nor high unemployment. As a matter of fact, all of these factors were literally on fire in 2006 through 2007. The market collapsed because the overinflated real asset market had finally reached its peak. Since this overinflated market was financed primarily with debt, upon its deflation, accelerated destruction of equity and capital commenced. Once you lose 10% of market value on a cash investment, you lose 10% of your equity as well. If you are levered 2x, that 10% market drop equated to a 20% wealth loss. 5% down payment housing deals equate to deeply negative equity values at a 10% market correction. So if one were to sit back and realize that 125% loan to value, or a negative 25% down, housing deals didn't just exist, they were relatively plentiful by historic standards, and derivative structures allowed certain corporate players, for example, the monoline insurers, to employ 90x plus leverage, then it's no wonder what happened when the housing market dropped 36% and the commercial real estate market dropped 42%. Believe me, ladies and gentlemen, and Bill, they are not finished falling. All right, well, here is an email I received from Tom, who says, "Hello from the States. I've lived in the UK and Japan during the 90s. Now I'm back in the States. However, I'm looking into moving back abroad for more opportunities overall and more personal happiness in achieving more goals. Generally speaking, do you think that expats have more problems with international investments than locals or not? Thanks, Tom." Tom, I don't see why expats should have more trouble. I believe international investments are, so far, at any rate, freely available to all and sundry in the United States. And, of course, on a tax basis, that depends entirely on where you live. And I assume that you, Tom, are a permanent resident in the United States. I don't know. In terms of your tax situation, it will very much depend on the status that you currently hold within the United States, and you don't mention what that is, so I can't really help you on that one. But listen, good luck, and I think you're making a good choice, as you know, ladies and gentlemen. I think you should all be thinking about moving abroad if you are of a mind to do so, and I talk a lot about that on the show, so hopefully that will encourage you to think more focusedly on that particular aspect of your lives for the future. All right, Monica Reyes from Brooklyn asks, "Good morning, Martin. A few days ago, I was watching a movie done by Alex Jones and Jesse Ventura on infusion centers, which you just mentioned in your show. Can you please talk more about what they are, the purpose, and anything you know about them? I would like to learn more about those places. Thank you, Monica Reyes from Brooklyn." Well, the infusion center, as I understand it, Monica, is a fairly innovative alternative to what would otherwise might be long waits in cold, impersonal hospitals, places where patients can receive somewhat specialized treatment, which falls short of regular hospital treatment, but they can be intravenous infusions, therapeutic injections, wound care, what would be a safe and professional and comfortable environment. The goal, as I understand it, is to make patients more comfortable than they would necessarily be able to procure for themselves in an emergency room, and the quality of care would appear to be more personal, caring, if you like, more customized. There's usually not a wait at the infusion suite, so patients spend less time in treatment and presumably therefore more time with family and friends. Anyway, there you go. Right, well, Gary Wagner wrote in saying, Richard, did you get any waves? By the way, in Boca Raton, in Misner Park, in January, the movie theater went out, and now the big store, Robin Stuckey, is liquidating the Quality Store. The great crook governor of Florida, that Rick Scott, the one that was the CEO for a medical insurance company that tried to steal $1 billion, turned down the $2+ billion to build a high-speed train that the cities want. He said we couldn't afford the $200 million that it would cost. But the very next day, after he turned down the money, he wanted to spend $75 million to dredge the port of Miami so the super container ships can dock. The only problem is that we don't have any shipping that goes out of Florida. Everything comes south, empty trucks go north. Gary Wagner. Oh, thank you for that, Gary. We have an email from Kunislav Lusik. I'm terribly sorry. I'm sure I'm pronouncing that completely wrong, but it's the best I can do, and I hope you recognize your own name, Kunislav. Hello, Richard. Thank you for all the information you share with us. My question is, what do you think will happen with the U.S. dollar this year? I'm looking to buy another currency with my U.S. dollars, but not sure which one and when to do it. It looks like the dollar is sinking more and more. Can you please answer me by email if you can? Thank you very much, Richard. Well, I did answer you, and I do hope that you got your answer. In the meantime, I would have to say that I feel that you are looking at what might be described as a low point in the dollar. I think that the dollar will rally. I think the dollar is very oversold at this point, and I think you could be looking for a rally over the next few, well, months at least, if not years, and I would be very careful about putting any significant funds into foreign currencies from this point on. Okay, I got a... I got an email from Vard Williamson, who says, Richard, your caller from New York meant fusion centers, police and FBI integration centers. Okay, well, that's something else altogether, and I'm not familiar with those, but anyway, ladies and gentlemen, anybody wants to write in and tell us what a fusion center is, or even call in. Hey, that's not going to be a problem. Wouldn't mind hearing from you if you know what a fusion center is and you can explain it to the caller. I had definitely not misread the article, but I think I apparently might have taken the wrong name out of the sense here. Anyway, so... fusion centers it is. Well, at least you know what infusion centers are, so now let's find out what fusion centers are. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're halfway through the show, and it's time for our break, and I will be right back.
The Progressive Radio Network, your premier progressive radio station.
This is Barry Farber with the best self-improvement advice you've ever had or ever heard. Learn a foreign language. Sounds impossible? Give me a chance to prove that I'm Barry Farber. I can guide you to mastery of any language in the world quickly, easily, inexpensively, and at home. You will grow culturally, linguistically, intellectually, commercially, professionally, even romantically. Get that smile off your face. It happened to me. The Barry Farber Language Club, Wednesdays at 10 a.m.
Hey, Lee.
Yeah, Jeff.
Your girlfriend gave another interview.
No, don't play it.
Listen to this.
I have a journalism degree. That is what I studied. I understand that this cornerstone of our democracy is a free press.
Shut it off. I said not to play it.
We are in the worst reality show in history.
Why won't she shut up?
You know she's going to be president, right?
Okay, stop it. That's not funny.
I think we should just go limp. Lay back. Maybe then the mama grizzly won't tear off your limbs.
Cheater in the Rude. Thursdays, 8 p.m. Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Carol Brier, host of Community Currency on Progressive Radio Network every Thursday, 5 to 6 p.m. Please join us as we connect people, ideas, important information, and discover solutions to some of the most urgent problems facing us. Every Thursday, 5 to 6 p.m., Community Currency on Progressive Radio Network.
This is Sandra B. Tay from Success Power Talk. You can listen live to me every Saturday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for the very best success strategies for your life, bringing you sumptuous, exciting topics, expert guests, and panelists from all over. You will not want to miss. Email me at coach@tateworks.com if you have questions you want read on the air. If you missed any past shows, go to progressiveradionetwork.com/archives to find them. Always take the best and leave the rest. Success Power Talks every Saturday, 4 p.m. on Progressive Radio Network.
This is PRN. Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. We're back, and I need to talk to you a little bit about a phenomenon that I want you to be aware of that I haven't discussed before, but definitely needs to be addressed. And it is a concept that is being bandied around by the government, namely the idea that it is financial subversion being carried out by unknown parties such as terrorists or hostile nations, which is either responsible for or a contributory factor to the 2008 economic crash. Now, you're going to hear this, in my opinion, more and more. And I absolutely do not want you to give this any thought at all. I think it is absolute nonsense, and my firm belief is that very soon you're going to hear about all kinds of shenanigans that are being proposed by underworld, underhand, terrorist-style people to bring the economy to its knees. Just another incipient nonsense to allow the government to have more control over your lives. And ladies and gentlemen, this will be a big one, because the government will take upon itself the right to go into your bank account, to your brokerage accounts, to examine your emails, your entire financial life of one sort or another, and that will be the excuse. The excuse is, oh, we have to allow the Department of Homeland Security to secure our economy. As I'm sure you know, this has nothing to do with terrorists. This is crazy bankers, incompetent idiots like Ben Bernanke doing the wrong thing, causing this country to come to fall to its knees in financial and economic terms. There's nothing to do with terrorists. But just because I say so, ladies and gentlemen, that is not going to change anything. So prepare yourself for this new eventuality. And this comes basically from a report in the Washington Times entitled Evidence Outlined in a Pentagon Contractor Report, suggesting that financial subversion carried out by unknown parties, such as terrorists or hostile nations, contributed to the 2008 economic crash by covertly using vulnerabilities in the U.S. financial system. I mean, already, when I tell you, ladies and gentlemen, use your common sense, use your sense of logic to decide whether these things are true or not. And you'll find yourself very easily able to make your own independent determinations of the rubbish and the subversive nonsense that's being put about, you know, by the government to scare you and to gain even more entry and intrusion into your personal lives. So, the unclassified 2009 report, Economic Warfare, Risks and Responses, by financial analyst Kevin D. Freeman, which was obtained by the Washington Times, states that, and I quote, a three-phased attack was planned as an imminent process against the United States economy, end of quote. While economic analysts and a final report from the federal government's Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission blame the crash on such economic factors as high-risk mortgage lending practices, good, and poor federal regulation and supervision, good, the Pentagon contractor adds a new element, outside forces, a factor the commission did not examine. And I quote, there is sufficient justification to question whether outside forces triggered, capitalized upon, or magnified the economic difficulties of 2008, end of quote, explaining that those domestic economic factors would have caused a normal downturn, but not the near collapse of the global economic system that took place. Suspects include financial enemies in Middle Eastern states, Islamic terrorists, hostile members of the Chinese military, or government and organized crime groups in Russia, Venezuela, or Iran. Chinese military officials publicly have suggested using economic warfare against the U.S. In an interview with The Times, Mr. Friedman said his report provided enough theoretical evidence for an economic warfare attack that further forensic study was warranted. The new battle space is the economy, he said. We spend hundreds of billions of dollars on weapon systems each year, but a relatively small amount of money focused against our financial markets through leveraged derivatives or cyber efforts can result in trillions of dollars of losses. And the perpetrators can remain undiscovered. This is the equivalent of box cutters on an airplane, Mr. Freeman said. Shall we calm down a little bit here, ladies and gentlemen? Take a little bit of a breather, you know? Try and relax a bit. So it's not our illegal cartel of money masters, otherwise known as the Federal Reserve, who was responsible for what happened in 2008. Nor was it the fault of Wall Street, who sliced and diced everyone's mortgages into tiny, bite-sized pieces to sell them to unwitting recipients in the largest financial boondoggle this side of the Atlantic. Nor the fault of Fannie and Freddie, who underwrote any of the above-mentioned toxic mortgage garbage, along navigating under the guise that property values can only go up. It's not the fault of the plummeting dollar that helped oil reach $147 in late summer of 2008, thanks to politicians who spend more than they bring in tax revenue, thanks to an all-too-eager, print-happy Federal Reserve who has decimated the value of the dollar by 98% since its inception in 1913. Couldn't be any of that, could it? No. You know, blame the Chinese, blame the Russians, blame turbaned men hiding in caves somewhere. Did Osama bin Laden create a quadrillion in leveraged derivatives? Was he loaning mortgage money to bad risks? How dumb do these New World Order elitists think we are? This is the end game. If the goal is to destroy America, Mr. Freeman said, noting that in his view, China's military, quote, has been advocating the potential for an economic attack on the U.S. for 12 years or longer, as evidenced by the publication of the book Unrestricted Warfare in 1999. The preponderance of evidence cannot easily be dismissed and demands a thorough and immediate study be commenced, the report says. Ignoring the likelihood of this very real threat ensures a catastrophic event. The report concluded that the evidence of an attack is strong enough that financial terrorism may have cost the global economy as much as $50 trillion. End of quote. This continued printing of money is the Achilles heel. In just the last 2 years, because most global investors have begun shying away from U.S. debt instruments like treasuries, it is your very own Federal Reserve, a private banking conglomerate, that is the number one buyer of U.S. debt. The Chinese are already cutting back on their investment, and in due time, when the time is right, the Chinese simply have to say no more, at which point the government bailout bubble will burst. Once in motion, there will be no more magic bullets for the Federal Reserve, Treasury Department, Congress, or the President. We'll have crossed the Rubicon. What will it look like on the other side is anyone's guess, but it could be that magic financial bullets get replaced with lead and missiles, as is usually the case when economies of nations are destroyed. While U.S. officials may not be overtly discussing economic warfare, one thing is for sure, and that is that the Pentagon or military are actively wargaming large-scale economic breakdown and civil unrest. Army game theorists have spent time on financial exchanges with traders attempting to learn how an economic attack could be identified and are reportedly working on preventing such a possibility. Clearly, the U.S. government is making contingency plans to deal with a worst-case, all-out collapse scenario of not only the economy, but the social and political systems. The war gaming, according to reports, began in 2008 at the onset of the economic crisis that planners from not just the United States, but around the globe, may have been aware of the dire possibility of economic collapse even earlier. It is well known that the U.S. government, as well as foreign counterparts, have been preparing bunkers and continuity of government for decades, but recent preparedness activities suggest that the planning in some aspects has been expedited. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure you can see where I'm coming from here. When the economic meltdown comes, you will be told that there is a high likelihood of an economic attack, quote, by our enemies, having taken place. They're already making oblique references to that possibility behind the flash crash of May last year. And they will grab for themselves dictatorial and emergency powers. And God only knows where that may lead. Enter the dreaded Department of Homeland Security. Bernanke, who currently blames increased demand as being the motive for the current rise in commodity prices, will gladly defer to foreign attacks as being responsible for why his crazy monetary experiment didn't work. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm telling you, it is coming. This nonsense is coming. And I don't know what else is coming. I haven't had a chance to keep up with the present shenanigans, let alone the nonsense that people are preparing for the future. But I assure you it's on its way. I don't want to have to say to you, ladies and gentlemen, the time is too late. You cannot move anymore. You are now restricted in your movements. But I see it happening. I see something coming in the not-too-distant future which is going to curtail your efforts to move out of the United States. I don't know what it is, but it's very, very serious and very, very frightening, ladies and gentlemen. And I've mentioned this on so many occasions, and I don't know if I didn't emphasize enough my predictions about the housing bubble and my prognostications about what was going to happen. But I remember thinking at the time, I cannot do more. And I'm thinking the same thing right now. And as things get worse, more and more of you are going to be in severe doubt as to a continued life in the U.S. is workable or not. Don't let it happen to you, ladies and gentlemen. That's it. All right. Well, I got a little email from somebody called Lucy who said, "Hi, Richard. For those of us who are economically challenged, would you please explain what exactly it means when a country's economy collapses?" I guess I can do that, Lucy. It's not very hard because, you see, an economy flourishes when there is a healthy balance between demand and supply. Now, the elements of demand are to be found within a consumer base that has money, money over and above that which it takes simply to keep alive and to pay the current bills. A healthy economy gives savings which allow people to go out and buy things that either need replacement or which are, let us say, simply impulse purchases, the kind you see at the checkout counter in supermarkets. And the supply, of course, involves people making these products and providing the products and able to, again, employ people, pay for the necessary equipment to produce the products, and ending up with a healthy profit at the end of the day, which they can either spend or put back into the business to make it grow or to buy further equipment or to do whatever it takes to make an economy grow. That's a healthy economy, Lucy. An unhealthy economy is when one or both of those sides of the equation fall apart. Now, when you have people who have bought houses and spent too much money on their houses and not paid attention to, for example, the proper ratio, which is somewhere between 25 and 30% of your income to be spent on your home, and gone not only the entire way through the income, but actually exceeded the amount of income that they have in terms of what they thought they could pay in mortgage expenses to buy that home. When people literally lose their minds, Lucy, and they buy things they can't afford, and they put themselves into a crazy amount of debt, very quickly those consumers will be unable to consume anymore, and that will produce a shortfall in the demand side of our equation. Now, on the other hand, when you have on the supply side companies like General Motors who produce cars that nobody wants to buy for any length of time and continue to do this and continue to pay people and get saddled with social costs which they absolutely cannot digest in terms of the business and the income they receive from the cars they do sell, when that goes on for long enough, Lucy, then you're going to see a breakdown in the supply side of that equation. Now, when, in addition to that, people are saddled with gigantic debts because the government goes out and spends much more than it brings in terms of tax money and has to borrow money in order to pay the bills, that also creates a huge breakdown in the supply side. So what you have when you have both sides, the demand and the supply side of an economy that are broken down, you have, frankly, an economy which is collapsing. And that's exactly what we see today. We see a collapsing economy. It would be enough if just one side of the equation was to be deficient. But in this particular case, Lucy, both sides are deficient. And that's what is happening right now. It doesn't fall neatly into a definition such as you asked for, but it does allow itself free rein in terms of what we can describe as being the cause of the collapse. So I hope you get that. If you have any further questions, again, please feel free to call in, ask, and I would be very happy to oblige you with an answer. All right. So, let's see what we have here. we have James Knopf, who came in with an email saying, Richard, one, I give the protesters credit in Wisconsin. How far would compensation for private sector's workers have fallen if it were not for the public sector's workers hanging on to their pay and benefits? Every victory for the public sector is also a victory for the private sector worker. Two, the last 30 years have seen the largest redistribution of wealth from the so-called middle class to the richest 1%. Three, yes, the pain does need to be shared by all. A, the military-industrial complex, over $1 trillion. B, the lobbying on Capitol Hill. One, businesses can spend hundreds of billions on elections but don't raise taxes. C, the pharmaceutical industrial complex, one, must move to a single payer, two, stop the over-drugging of people, D, dismantle any too big to fail businesses into smaller businesses employing more people, and E, eliminate or reduce the tax write-off for entertainment. $25 million a year for a person to hit a baseball in a stadium built by the taxpayer is just ludicrous. I am sure there are any more before they ever get to the public sector workers' benefits. I enjoy your show, James Knopf. Well, thank you very much, James. I was happy to relay that particular piece of information. Steve Kruger, a two-liner here. Richard, what would be the effect on oil prices if oil futures contracts were only used by people who were willing to take physical delivery of the oil? Would that take the gamble out of the price of oil, or would the effect hardly be noticed? Stephen Kruger. Excellent question, Steve, and the answer is very simple. It would be catastrophic, and I'll tell you why. The purpose of a futures market for all of these commodities, and ladies and gentlemen, many people don't understand this, and it's very important that you do. The purpose of these futures markets is to allow producers to price their product at some point in the future so that they can make their projections and budgets between now and that future moment and know either how much they're going to have to pay for a particular product or how much they're going to receive for a particular product, depending on whether they are producers or consumers. Now, in addition to the people, as you say, who are willing to take physical delivery, are the speculators. Now, speculators are people like you and me who think, who look at the price of oil and say, I think oil's going to go up in price. I think people are going to buy in the future. I think the Middle East is going to have a problem with its unrest, and therefore the price of oil must rise. And therefore, Steve, you buy a contract, and that contract may be sold to you by anybody. It could be sold by another speculator. It could be sold by somebody who is selling oil in the future and wants to secure a price right now. Could be anybody. But you, as a speculator, help to provide what we call a liquid market in the marketplace, without which, if you were not in the market as a speculator, along with millions of other people, the price would jump up and down in a very violent and uncontrolled fashion, and it would be impossible for people to make determinations as to what they wanted to do in the future. So these speculators, which are so blind when prices go up, but they're always forgotten when prices go down, are an essential ingredient, I repeat, essential to the well-functioning of commodity markets and even currency markets and precious metals markets. And so please give them a break. They lose as much money as they make. They're not people who have a passport to instant wealth. Far from it. These people are normally sitting in a five-store walk-up in a T-shirt and jeans, tearing their hair out, wondering when to buy and sell, and ending up with heart attacks. So please take it as it's meant to be. All right. So we have Pete in Jersey City, who wants to comment on the relationship of the Fed's quantitative easing and taxes, also wants to comment on how we are on the edge of the abyss and how we can't come to terms with it. Pete, welcome to the show.
Yes, good morning, Richard. Starting with a comment you made earlier in the show that I found interesting with Bank of America's little scheme there. In the beginning of the panic concerning personal bankruptcies that goes back about 15 to 20 years, there was a consumer warning given out because a lot of lawyers were advertising that they could clean up your credit and give you a fresh start. And they warned on various news shows that some of these techniques involved a legal maneuver known as file segregation. They never came out and said it was illegal. They just hinted strongly that it would create more of a problem than it would solve for the individual. This seems to me very much like Bank of America is using the corporate equivalent of file segregation. Again, proving that what's okay for the big companies and the conglomerates is not okay for us, and that whenever you see it, as you pointed out before, you know that government's not looking out for us.
Well, I mean, of course, and this has always been true, but the thing is that in times past, the regulators did their job. I mean, it's astonishing to think how much fraud takes place when the regulators do their job. In this particular case, when you think that the regulators have simply turned a blind eye to all this, all hell breaks loose simply because you get more and more people encouraged by these things to take place. I mean, you know, I can give you any number of examples. The whole concept of Bernie Madoff, which was willfully ignored by the SEC. And I mean, you know, the banks with their mortgages, I mean, it's well known now. We've talked about it on the show here. We've talked about what's been going on. And what worries me is that the regulators, as they see these things are happening more and more, and they see that more and more people are drawing attention to them, are going to turn their attention. They're going to try to blame somebody else for this whole idea, as I mentioned. And I think it's very important for people who see, for example, the regulators and law enforcement officials looking the other way, that they do, you know, whistleblow. They do have the courage to stand up, because I assure you there are enough people out there who know what's going on, who could stand up and basically spill the beans. Now, when you take somebody like this guy Manning, who spilt the beans with WikiLeaks, and he is clearly being victimized in jail right now and given a hard time as a message to other people: do not blow the whistle. And we don't care whether it's on the government or the big companies or the small companies. Keep your information to yourself. I mean, it's like the entire system is sending a message that this must not happen. Obama, by the way, has it in his purview to stop this. He could, with a word, prevent this activity going on, this man being stripped and held in solitary confinement. I'm sure you all know what I'm talking about. You know, your point is well taken. I mean, I think that there is more to come. I think more people are going to be drawn to the mat, and the interesting thing will be to see whether the power of public opinion is such that a new ECORA from the 1930s, who basically blew the whistle on everything, dragged people into Congress and culminated in creating the Securities and Exchange Commission with all the rules and regulations that were set up until they were disbanded back in the late 90s, that will, I think, happen. And the question is, will it be sooner rather than later?
I think it brings us to the point of another question that you asked rhetorically somewhat, and never, I don't know that you ever quite got an answer from anyone concerning how America can stand on the edge of an abyss and not seem to want to do anything. And I think it, I think you can point to any number of examples of co-optation, especially one of the earliest one, public relations, infusing itself into government influence and becoming media conglomerates. But we seem to have become, we seem to have accepted that we are an overdog nation with an underdog mythos. we still think we're the flag bearer, the flute player, and the snare drum player limping away from the American Revolution, and that we don't go looking for fights, but we don't run away from them when we've spent 125 years minimum building empires around the world, and we just don't seem to be able to come to grips with that.
Absolutely. Peter, thank you very much for your comment. Very pithy and very interesting. Unfortunately, we've come to the end of the show, and we could continue this hopefully perhaps on Friday. But in the meantime, have a wonderful week, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back with you on Friday. Until then, this is Richard Martin saying bye-bye.